Hello there and welcome to the official EFL podcast with just one massive game left of the season, the Championship Playoff Final, which is at Wembley this Sunday. First of all, though, a huge well done to Oxford United and Crawley Town, who got through their respective challenges last weekend at the home of football, sun-drenched, and they, at the end, were hoisting the trophy high into the sky, one climbing into the Championship and one climbing into League One. To preview the big game at the weekend and to look back on the semi-finals and maybe a little touch on what we saw from the finals over the past weekend is Juliet Farrington. Jules, how are you?
I'm good. A little bit of WSLing, a little bit of Premier Leaguing, and we are at the end. So some more EFLing. What a final. What a final you've got lined up this weekend.
It's been a long time coming, it feels like. We're getting very excited about it. And right, let's go back to the start, okay? So with the two playoff semi-final first legs Sunday past... They were cagey, I think was the word.
It does feel a long time ago. It does feel ages ago.
You lose track of time with this because you go from a stage of having football on every single day to it categorically stopping. Then you've got to try and work out where you are. But what we saw in those first legs didn't necessarily manifest itself in the second, did we? Which was to everyone's wonderful entertainment.
It was brilliant. I think, first of all, Ellen Road, when it is rocking and the scarves are hoisted and they are waving, it is one of the most atmospheric stadiums you can get in England. It was absolutely bouncing. I think one of the best atmospheres you can get in the country. And I know that they've been wobbling a little bit of late, Leeds United. But to produce that performance against Norwich in the second leg, they absolutely pumped Norwich. And you just feel that if you were Southampton watching on or West Brom at that point watching on, you'd be worried because for some, they found what they've been doing for the most of the season in the final third. They weren't conceding. They didn't defensively. They looked strong. All the things that they hadn't done that obviously meant they missed out on going automatically, they put in that performance against Norwich. And to be honest, the only team that did stop Leeds from going up automatically was Ipswich, but they do seem to have found that form. They seem to have gone back to what got them there in the first place, and it was an incredible watch. And Norwich, yes, they made mistakes, yes, they didn't really turn up, but once they'd gone a goal down, there was no way they couldn't get back into it. Disappointing. David Wagner loses his job almost straight away.
Jules? Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that? We're surprised? I mean, there were whispers about the potential of his position either way, which I don't know how concrete they were. But given the start to the season, the first third of the season, the form that got them up into the playoffs by the end of the season, do you think he should be feeling harshly done by?
He probably does feel harshly done by, but there's been a lot of change at Norwich, hasn't there? And you could look at it and think it could be a reset moment for them next season. Mm-hmm. But with David Wagner, I think he's shown that he's a very good Championship manager. And I don't think he would be short of offers if he wants to stay in England, wants to stay in the Championship and try and guide another club into those promotion playoff places, whether that be automatically or obviously in the playoffs as well. He's a good coach. He's a good manager. We've seen that with Huddersfield Town. But I think there's just been a lot of change at Norwich and maybe Norwich as a club needs to reset itself and decide what it wants to do.
Just to round out the Norwich chat, I mean, you look at the likes of Jonathan Rowe, Gabby Sara, Josh Sargent, players that have been standouts for them this season. Is there a fear, if you are a Norwich fan, that you think because we didn't make that next step up, then those types of players are going to be sniffed out around either teams in and around the top end of the Championship or potentially teams in the Premier League?
But they already have been sort of sniffed out by teams in and around them. There are clubs looking at those type of players.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily to say that they will leave, but it depends on what they want to do, what they want to achieve. They're in a position now where they could move on and further their careers elsewhere, playing elsewhere at maybe a higher level or, you know, at a good, strong Championship promotion chasing club, which is what Norwich would want to be.
Yeah.
Want to be next season, and maybe it's an opportunity to move on and develop.
Be intrigued to see how that one pans out, not least because I've got friends in and around that particular football club. So it is always that it's the other side of doing this job, and you'll know this as well, Jules, with the contacts that you've made. When you see managers go, when you see staff go, people see it as manager leaves club. That's what happens all the time. But knowing a bit more of the human side of what that entails, where it becomes quite jeopardy ridden for people that you know and love, it's always a tricky situation. Moving on to Leeds, just to box off that semi-final, the reaction of the fans, obviously that place, as you said, it's volcanic and it's noise, but at the end, there was that split second where you think they're primed here to go bananas and get themselves on the pitch. There was a real sense of kind of professional reticence, wasn't there? They knew one more game. The players knew one more game. Daniel Farke was very keen to stress it straight away. Yes, we've won, but the biggest game is still to come. Ethan Ampadu, my word, that young man impresses every time you hear him, every time you see him play, and feels like he's been around for ages, doesn't he, having had the career that he's had so far. There was that real professional sense of, this is great, this is wonderful, this is joyous, but it ultimately doesn't mean anything unless you get through what Sunday is.
But the last time they were in a position to be promoted, it was... they were on the cusp of promotion, if I remember. It was in the pandemic years. There was no atmosphere. There was absolutely nothing whatsoever. Mm. Maybe, I don't know, a handful of directors. People weren't allowed to go to football. Maybe 12 to 20 people might have been there.
Oh, it was awful.
There was absolutely no problem this time around. And I think maybe because they were so close and because of Ipswich, I'm still brilliant for Ipswich and they're probably still celebrating. And they've got over that disappointment. But it's the first time they've been at Wembley since 19... Well, they hadn't won a playoff, had they? They hadn't won a playoff at Elland Road since, like, 1987. Something ridiculous like that. And that's the first time they are going to Wembley or will be at Wembley for 2008. And I just think that respect clearly was there. But I think from what the fans believe, they just know, isn't it? They just know there's still one more to go. And whilst it was worth celebrating getting there, obviously the fans wanted to do it automatically. Mm-hmm. But I think that night they raised to the challenge and they probably think, you're smiling, they can do it after that performance. If I was Southampton, and I think it's so close to call, I know we're going to talk about them in a minute.
Yeah.
I think that performance would have struck fear into Southampton.
Mm.
And maybe the fans are just holding on to that, just that feeling that we know we're there, we know we can do it, but we just can't celebrate it just yet.
That's such a good point to make, because I suppose as well, if you are a Leeds fan, and they can be a cynical lot and quite... understandably so, given what history's thrown at them. You're looking at that second leg going, I hope we've saved some of that for the final.
Well, that's just it. But then you could look at it and think, well, we've had a longer to recover. You know, it's all these little bits and pieces that come into it. And as well, I know this is, again, ridiculous, but this is why it's a cup competition, isn't it, ultimately, the playoffs. It's not regular football. No. It's an absolute shootout. And I was reading, and we are going to talk about League One and League Two, that both the League One and League Two playoff finals were won by teams who failed to beat their opponents in the regular season.
Nice.
So they could just be saving it for that as well.
For the big day.
For the big day.
My God. See, this is why we have you on. It's that deep dive of narrative that you find. Not just,
well, they lost twice to Southampton, didn't they, in the regular season.
And only just the other week as well, which makes it even more pertinent. Maybe that was the result that gave them a collective kick up the backside to make sure that they got through the semi-finals in the way that they did. Let's discuss Southampton then. We'll go on to the details of the final in due course.
Both teams, Leeds and Southampton, went away, kept the clean sheet, both the same scoreline, and then thought, right, we'll get you back to our place and we'll show you what we can do.
Yeah. It did really feel like that. And obviously chat before the game about whether Che Adams was going to be fit. He wasn't. But when you've got someone like Adam Armstrong in the kind of goal-scoring form that he's in, the atmosphere was there. It's as loud as I've heard St Mary's in the time that I've been there, both working on it and playing there. And it just seemed, it almost seemed, and I'm conscious of giving some real balance to what we're chatting about, but it almost seems like collectively Leeds kind of went, right, we're going to do this. And everyone kind of went, oh, right, if that's what they're going to do, then should we give it a blast? Yeah. And Southampton did exactly that, didn't they? It was quite close in the first half, but went through the gears in the second and very, very clinical and more than worthy winners come the end of the game.
Yeah, they were so comfortable in the second leg. It was fully deserving. Mm. They have a good squad of players. Should they have been closer to the automatic, to second place? Mm. Probably. But yep. Again, it's Ipswich. Mm. You know, it's the Ipswich factor. Nobody probably thought at the start of the season that would happen. Mm-hmm. In fact, both Leeds and Southampton should feel, their fans, that they should have gone up automatically. But it's tough, the Championship. But again, did West Brom really turn up in that match? Mm. The future looks good for West Brom. Maybe they were the underdog. I remember speaking to Carlos Corberan before the two semi-finals, and he felt that Southampton were the favourites
to go up
through the playoffs. And I know that Russell Martin, you know, has had this sort of dogmatic approach to his style of management attached to him, but I think this season he's done really well, and he did tinker around on the last day against Leeds. Maybe when I was at that game at Elland Road, Leeds against Southampton at the regular season, Southampton.
What was that game like, Jules? Just leading up to what we'd seen from obviously the Leeds that then you then saw in the semi finals, and the Saints side that you saw in the semi finals. Was there any inkling of what that potentially might be when you saw them at Elland Road on the final?
I always think there was a feeling it was always going to be Leeds and Southampton to come through and face each other. I think that was the mood. And I think that Leeds fans had certainly accepted at that point, especially when Southampton had scored their second, that there was, and obviously everything was going off at Portman Road, that kind of there was an acceptance that it was going to have to be through the playoffs. And I think that perhaps there was disappointment that Leeds didn't finish and didn't play well on that day, on the last day. But that could be the emotion, the hangover of knowing what was going on. The atmosphere certainly wasn't anything like it was at Elland Road in the second leg of that playoff semi-final against Norwich. But it was the fact that just Southampton tinkered with a few things and try a few things out. And maybe that was Russell Martin thinking, well, this could well be the final. So let's see how this works. Mm-hmm. And it played down to a T. But I just feel the reaction of the fans at St Mary's compared to the reaction of the fans at Elland Road, it's like as if they were holding back and probably going to give everything from a fan's point of view. Not saying that Southampton won't, but it was like, okay, we've still got one to go. Where Southampton, the joyous occasion and everything else that goes with it, that maybe they thought, well, we are they celebrating the end of the season and the fact that they're in the playoff final?
Yeah.
Or are they celebrating but not thinking that, you know, well, we were up against Leeds United and we saw how well they're going to play.
Yeah.
You know, can we beat that machine? Because it just feels that Leeds needed that performance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas Southampton had been performing because they'd known they were in that playoff position for a little bit longer than Leeds wanted to, because Leeds didn't want to really be there. Yeah.
And it was the job that they did against West Brom. We spoke before the game, and it was emphasis on the likes of Mikey Johnston and Tom Fellows either side. But they ended up playing so much of the game ostensibly as a back five, really, which goes to show what Southampton were wanting to do to them. We were chatting post game as well. It's the oldest squad, I think, in the Championship. There's a lot of players out of contract, a lot of well known players out of contract. We saw the takeover that happened during the course of the season, which meant that side of the club was much more settled, less stressful. No parachute payments now. Haven't spent a penny on transfer fees for 18 months. So, not necessarily a sliding doors moment, but a time, even though in a moment of disappointment, Jules, to potentially evolve? Are we going to see Carlos stack it with young players? Is he going to get money freed up to be able to change the dynamism of that, what that particular team and squad and direction of it is?
I kind of get the feeling that the future is bright for West Brom. Yeah. I get the feeling after talking to him ahead of the first leg against Southampton that they wanted to compete. They were there to compete, but to actually just be where they were with all the turmoil that had been going on behind the scenes, that it's progression. And I think that it's in the right hands. I think he's a very intense coach, Carlos Corberan, but I think he's a very ambitious coach. I think we've seen that with the work that he did at Leeds United, the work that he did with Huddersfield Town, and now is at West Brom. And I think that work will now continue to be done. There will be a lot of players, as you say, that will move on, but then he can put his own stamp, his own authority maybe on that. Progression has been made, but he's respected. He's light. Yes, they weren't good enough.
The best option, obviously, is getting to the final and getting up. But if you're looking at what helps with that holding pattern of a football club, getting to the playoffs with a team, of course, as big as West Brom, with its Premier League experience, but the current incarnation and what is the job that Carlos has done, he's revered by West Brom fans, isn't he? He's absolutely adored because he's got them from a very, very, very sticky situation, flirted with the playoffs last season, into the playoffs this season. So as you're saying, progression is there, isn't it?
The progression is there, but now he's got the platform.
Yeah.
With the new ownership group.
Stability to work with, yeah.
And maybe see what happens next season, how they get on. But if you look at what he did last season and what he's done this season, there's a very good chance. With the teams that have been relegated from the Premier League, that West Brom will be in and around those positions. Maybe not fifth for most of the season, but maybe not. But you'd think with the coach and the ownership and an opportunity just to freshen up the squad, bring down the average age, that there'll be a lot of energy around the Hawthorns next season.
Right, that's West Brom. We wish them, of course, all the best of the luck in the Championship next season. But now the game on Sunday. It's obviously always dubbed as the richest game in domestic football, isn't it? Which I think is quite right, given what it takes to get through and what you end up getting with regards to getting into the Premier League. Let's look at it from a purely footballing perspective first and foremost. We mentioned Che Adams. There's question marks about his fitness. Question marks about Patrick Bamford's fitness coming into the final as well. But I think that will manifest itself in due course. But it's a strange one, isn't it? Because you look at these two managers, and I think we're very firmly in the kind of stratosphere of they will pick whatever team they see fit for that particular game.
There's no sentiment at all.
So even though if you could be, and I'm not picking on Joel Pirot when I say this, but Joel Pirot plays, brings something a little different out of Jorginho Rutter, as does Patrick Bamford. Does Daniel go, well, it's hard to change a team that won 4-0 and was very emphatic? Or does he go, well, this play might bring something out of him, might add something to that? And it is going back to what you're saying, that one-off game riddled with jeopardy.
I just found it interesting, the second leg against Norwich, how suddenly they found, we said it at the start, they found what they were doing that got them on that incredible, unbeaten, winning run at the start of the year. And Patrick Bamford hasn't really been available to them fitness-wise for the last month of the regular season. But it was just the goals that they were conceding and they were leaking that was sort of raising a few eyebrows, being so defensively solid. And then in the final third, they just found their scoring boots again. It's like as if Daniel Farke just went back to what got them there. And I just think that, he's going to go, I don't think he looks, like I say, with sentiment. I just think he goes with the best team available, the players who he believes, and he'll be seeing them in training this week. Maybe he'll find, look at something different. Some players, maybe a player will perform really well in training in the week in the build-up this that might get an opportunity. They've done their media early, which is always what I find quite telling. I've noticed Leeds.
Okay.
I think Leeds did their, have done their sort of open day, media day. They did it on Monday.
Yeah.
And listening to some of the player interviews, even players who've been in that team regularly this season don't know.
Really?
They don't know if they're going to be part of it on Sunday.
Right.
It's a shootout, isn't it? It's a shootout.
Yeah, I've been intrigued to see the build up of the both, because having been at St Mary's on Friday night and had the pleasure of seeing Russell afterwards, who, bless him, he even said it as well. He's
not going to tinker though, is he? He's done his tinkering now.
But he looked, and he even said it, because in the post match interview, and it's a bit ironic me saying it, I just said to him, "You look a little bit tired, mate," and he went, "I'm knackered. I'm absolutely knackered," because. Yeah, and in that moment, crystallises what a manager is. Because I went into the kind of manager's lounge a bit, just saying hello to her. And you'll see it all the time in the tunnel. Every single person looking at him, asking him, wanting him his attention. Gaffer, what about that? Well done. And he's looking around just thinking, probably just get me in a dark room for a day or so, just to be alone with my thoughts so I can work out what I want to do, I can process what I've seen, and I can understand where I want to be come Sunday.
But I always find this quite interesting. I know I'm just moving it sideways. When you, as a manager, the intensity on a manager. I spoke with Emma Hayes on the last day of the WSL season, Chelsea winning the title.
Well, you saw two. I mean, but sorry to
play
your daughters. You saw the Saturday, Sunday. You had the perfect situation to see what it does to people.
She was knackered. She was emotionally drained. They did what? They won a trophy. They won the title. They could have won four, but she finished. And we all know that she's moving on, and we know that Jurgen Klopp's moving on. But they are both exhausted.
Yeah.
And Russell Martin's probably the same. but not the same, but probably the same. All managers are. Daniel Farr, every single manager. Because, you know, for sometimes three times a week, twice a week a lot, very rarely once a week, that interviews, they're getting asked questions about things they probably don't want to tell. It's our job, your job. We're asking them things they probably don't want to tell us the answers to. But it's like constant. And not only that, you're putting a team together, you're managing a group of players.
People, their
emotions, their problems, they're trying to improve them as players, trying to work on tactical analysis, analysts giving you videos, cutting down things that you're analysing. It's a 24/7 job. And with Russell Martin and obviously Daniel Farker as well, because those are the two managers, they're having to do it for another week, but another week, which they know the ultimate aim is to get that final spot in the Premier League for next season. And that is intense. And people, it's the richest game, as you say, in football, and you want to win it. You want to win it, but you want to be the best prepared version that you can be to go into it. And that's just not the players; that's the coaches and the management as well.
It suggested that they were going to head down, because obviously the game was on Friday, and then the final just over a week later, and because of geographically how that works for Southampton, they were going to go down either yesterday, which would have been Monday, recording today on a Tuesday, down to Wembley, get yourself down, because it's
do the sightseeing.
Get your hat on, get your standing map,
have a look around
everywhere. Just kind of get the bearings a little bit, come away, do what's needed to be done, and then a couple of days before, maybe the day before, head down somewhere a little closer.
And but geography, Leeds, that's easier for Southampton to do than Leeds.
Completely. Well, I mean, because Leeds are going to go down there, I presume, in the next couple of days and be down there lock stock. To go backwards and forwards in the week leading up to it, of course, it's a drain on resources and energy. But I'll be intrigued to see if that makes any particular difference. Because, of course, we're talking about, we mentioned Daniel Farker, and his managerial career has been automatic promotion, hasn't it? He talks about it being the second bullet. But for him to go there and just kind of make sure that whatever he needs to give to his players is the right thing. Because I suppose if you saw a manager kind of overawed a little bit or thinking, not sure about this, then that infiltrates what the players are feeling, doesn't it?
But also the fact that Leeds haven't had success in the playoffs. Mm. They've got that.
Do you put any creative... You talk about 2008 and it's quite pertinent because I was there in body but not necessarily in spirit because I was terrible in that game. But five playoff campaigns.
But what's it like then? What's it like being... What's it like playing in them?
Well, it's a lot of the stuff around it, the attention... I mean, and that was a League One final, so there was a lot of attention around it. And I remember vividly texting with Ian Ashby, who was there with Hull City. They were playing in the Championship final the day before. Hull City beating Bristol City to get to the Premier League. And you kind of... as we were staying not too far from Wembley, but you can hear it's obviously busy, busy place. And then I was texting him afterwards, and obviously they were just... They were in orbit that night. They were going bananas, and you just sat there going, and bizarrely, because you're a professional and you've done everything the right way, you're going, please be us tomorrow, please be us tomorrow. Fingers crossed, which is ridiculous. And we didn't. And Doncaster were better. They turned up. They dealt with the occasion. Leeds fans were there from, I think the kickoff would have been 3. They were there from 1, packing the place out. They were noisy. They were everywhere. So they know how to come to an occasion. But the thing you look at, and we look at it, don't we, when we're working with Sky, is, oh, well, the record's not so good. Brentford were like that for many, many years, not being very good in the playoffs, and managed to snap that trend and get to the Premier League. So that history stands there for the fans. That I can't think that there'll be anybody there from... I'll tell you who will be there from 2008, the kit man. The kit man who was a young lad that came in because he was the goalkeeper coach's son is still there. Brilliant. Chris Beasley is called. And every time we go back, we always manage to pilfer something, which he turns a wonderful blind eye to. So there'll be him and maybe a couple of others. Big Martin on security, a couple of others. The rest,
Big Martin on security.
Seriously, Jules, he's about 9 foot. And if you want someone in charge of security, get someone that's 9 foot. So there is that's they're the only ones in and around the club. The fans, of course, will have horrendous memories of those particular things. But this batch of players, this professional batch of players, in theory, goes into that pretty fresh, pretty clean, ready to kind of, well, we know it's gone. This is the now, and this is what we're going to do.
Going back to what Emma Hayes was saying post-match when I spoke to her on Saturday when they won the WSL title, she said, if you're given a second chance, don't take a third. So this is Leeds United's second chance. I just feel they looked like a Premier League side against Norwich when they pumped them 4-0. Mm-hmm. I know you can't plan for success, and you can't. As a fan, their fans probably aren't planning for success. They want success, but you can't plan for it. Southampton will want success, you can't plan for it. But I just feel they've given themselves a really, really good chance, and they want to break that history. They want to break that run. Mm. There isn't an underdog. No. I just, it's playoff finals. They are, as they say, they're the best things to win.
Yeah.
And the worst things to lose.
Given how balanced you've made it, could you possibly say which way?
I keep going back to that game Leeds United played at Elland Road. The atmosphere, the scarves, the vibe, the performance, whatever they did in the build-up to that game from the regular season that saw them miss out on automatic promotion, they found it. Mm-hmm. Can they find it again one more time? I'd go for Leeds, but I think it could go. I think it just could go all the way. I just think it'll go all the way. And if it does go all the way, then it's anyone's.
Yeah.
If it's a penalty shootout, then it's anybody's.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. It's one I can't wait for. It's genuine. It's within the Prussian household. There's Leeds fans, there's Southampton fans, there's all kinds of people involved. So it's an intriguing one, to say the least. Let's just have a quick reminder of what last weekend brought, because potentially, well, I would, and again, you've got to bracket this with the utmost respect.
Who are we starting with?
Well, I mean, there was an assumption that Bolton would rock up and rock back up the M6 with something like nicely tucked under their arm, but no, Oxford United, Des Buckingham, congratulations. Wow, amazing.
I'd like to think on this podcast I did actually tip my cap to Oxford. I don't know why I thought Oxford. However, in the build-up to all things playoffs, I keep a notebook, and here it is. It's very exciting. But I remember doing the game, I don't know if you can see this, Bolton against Oxford on Tuesday the 12th of March.
Yes.
When Bolton pumped Oxford.
A hefty win, yeah.
A hefty win. Des Buckingham was very much under the cosh after that game. And I actually made this note. I'm going to read it to you. This will make you laugh. Be ready. This week could well give fans a true indication of the League One table and how it will look for Oxford at the end of the season. I absolutely write some rubbish in these books. And then
it's contextual, though, isn't it? What you just see.
But it is. It is. And they'd beaten Cheltenham 2-1 and they were back to winning ways, I put there. And in the build-up to that match against Bolton, Des Buckingham had said, Cheltenham will be a different test than Bolton. It took us a while to get going at the weekend. I just go through this.
Yeah.
They got absolutely pumped in March by Bolton. And yet they beat Bolton. And deservedly so.
Comfortably.
Bolton. To be promoted to the Championship. And Bolton, who finished third just in the regular season, so close again to automatic promotion, for whatever reason, didn't turn up.
Yeah.
Weird how it works out.
But intrigued to see what... But, I mean, Bolton will be, again, perennially favourites to go up automatically, won't they? Even though you've got... teams coming down from the Championship that they're going to have to contend with. But amazing work from Oxford. Such a long time, a generation, hasn't it? It's been since they were in the second tier of English football.
I've also made a note. I think it's 25 years. I think it's like a quarter of a century since they were in the... A quarter of a century. Yeah. How old does that make you feel? 1999, since they were last in the second tier of English football. And I think... Des Buckingham, because I remember speaking to him, obviously, after that defeat, not really knowing what was going on. The rumours weren't great. Just over 200 fans had made that journey that night to watch that performance. And Bolton were free-flowing. They were expansive. They were playing with freedom. And then, obviously, you'd expect that at Wembley. Yeah. But that didn't happen. But to think that Des Buckingham moved his life from, I think he was in Mumbai at the time when he came in mid-season. Liam Manning had gone to Bristol City. It wasn't quite going to plan. And like he was parachuted in, Oxford being the position that they were at the time, parachuted in, bringing his family over. You know, that's quite difficult to do, huge. Like bringing everybody over. And the expectation that's on you to then go and keep what was already in place going is a pretty tough thing to do. And I know that the story with it being his boyhood club and he's a fan of the club.
Yeah.
And to be expected to deliver what his predecessor had done, and I point out that game against Bolton, 5-0, you get humped. you don't really know what happened, but whatever happened after that game has got them to where... They are the same group of players. They're the same players. The same players. Mm-hmm. And it's got them to where they are. And they're just living probably their best lives this week.
They will be right now. Yeah, it's an amazing job done by Des and Oxford United. And it's just a huge congratulations from us all at the EFL. Crawley Town, I think given obviously how emphatic they were over the course of two legs, to talk about coming into the final with confidence is an understatement when you've scored eight, isn't it? So was it as straightforward as that in the final for you? Was it a case of them turning up and crew having to deal with injuries and obviously getting through an emotional semi-final against Doncaster on penalties?
I just think crew have just struggled with form, as we've seen. They struggled to connect. Obviously, due to all the setbacks and challenges that they were facing, it was a very young team as well, with the injuries. But Crawley were just dominant, fully deserved. But I think with Crawley and Scott Lindsay, but Crawley as a club as well, to go from where they were at the end of last season, nobody gave them a chance this season just because of the turmoil of last season, but they'd clearly learnt as a club. and they progressed as a club.
Tenor of players as well. I mean, he had boatloads of players.
But the way, very smart recruitment.
Yeah.
Very, very, very smart recruitment. Mm-hmm. They now have got saleable assets if they were to move the players on. But I think they deserve to beat Crewe, but also you feel it's deserving for Scott Lindsay as well, for everything that he's experienced as well.
Agreed with all of that. We're almost there, Jules. Are you ready for a break yet in the season?
Ready for this. It's the festival season. It's the festival season
now.
You go from the
football
season to the festival season with a little bit of summer football and tournament football in between to kick back and watch.
Weekend, then,
yeah. Are you ready?
Yeah. Well, it's one of those that we... You do it and then you stop for a bit and then you kind of go...
Quick.
Yeah, feel like I should be doing something there, but yeah.
Anyway, you've not said Leeds or Southampton. You've not said which way.
I've lent on Leeds to win in a very elongated penalty shootout.
Going all the way then, is it?
Going all the way. 10-9 I've gone for in the penalty shootout, but I don't know. As ever. Brilliant. Juliet Farrington, thorough, informative and charming as ever. Thanks for your company.
Have a good summer.
So that's our Championship playoff final preview done and dusted. It's going to be quite simply massive. A big thank you to Juliet Farrington, not just for today, but her sterling contribution throughout the season. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please give us a follow in all the usual places or watch here on YouTube. I promise you, it's worth it. My name's David Prutton, and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.